The links between literacy, education, and economic well-being are well established. Getting an education can help lift you out of poverty. Between 1996 and 2002, BC had a number of programs and policies that recognized this and supported poor people in upgrading their education. You could receive welfare while attending school, and basic adult education tuition was free. Post-secondary institutions got special funding to set up programs to deliver services for students on income assistance. When the Liberals came into power under Gordon Campbell in 2002, they gutted the program funding and changed the rules that allowed people to go to school while on welfare. A new report looks at the programs, the cuts, and welfare rule changes and examines the results for people living in poverty. Shauna Butterwick is one of the authors of A Path Out of Poverty, Helping BC Income Assistance Recipients Upgrade Their Education. It's part of the Economic Security Project, a joint project between the Center for Policy Alternatives and SFU. Shauna is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Studies at UBC, specializing in adult education, and she's joined us this morning by phone. Good morning, Shauna.
Good morning.
The report is called A Path Out of Poverty. What is known about the connection between upgrading your education and gaining more economic security?
Well, it's one part of the step, and it's important to not create some sort of, that this is some kind of one-size-fits-all situation. I think what this particular set of programs and services offered was an opportunity for students to actually finish their grade 12. And then that would enable them to get into some more skills-based and work-specific kinds of training. So without that grade 12, you can't get into even more short-term programs that will get you into a living wage job. And that's the pathway. It's that those education foundations and then some skills-based training are absolutely essential to getting jobs that pay a living wage. Otherwise, it's extremely well documented that people cycle around they're either the unemployed poor or they're the employed poor without that education piece. So these programs were recognizing that and allowing students to get some upgrading actually within the college system, because upgrading is also provided through school boards as well.
Your research involved qualitative, in-depth interviews with educators who were involved in the programs that were cut. Why did you decide to take that approach?
Well, I think what happens a lot when we have policy changes is that the wisdoms and knowledge generated from when we've got some programs that are working, when they're cut, is that we lose that. And I think it was important for us to kind of capture that. And I'm hoping that we will return to, you know, we'll recognize the value of these programs, both socially and economically, that they make sense. So I wanted to talk to the people who had been directly involved in running them to see, tap into their wisdom. Because these kinds of on-the-job kinds of understandings are often not documented, and that learning is lost. And then if indeed we return to offer similar kinds of programs, you don't need to start over again or reinvent the wheel. And these were extremely committed people. I was really struck by the passions they brought to working with this particular group.
And what was the overall nature of the special educational programs for people on income assistance, the programs that were cut?
Well, I looked at one specific set of services, and this was an opportunity between 1996 and 2002 for those on income assistance who had not, because at that point you had to go through three phases. One was initially job search on your own, and then the next phase was getting some assistance with the job search, and then the third phase was if you still hadn't been able to find work, you could actually depending on your educational needs, go to school and continue to receive income assistance. So these were people who had multiple barriers. They had not been able to get into a job through the other two phases. And so what happened at that point is they continued to get assistance. And they also gave special funds, targeted funds, to colleges and institutes They also gave it to community-based agencies, so I just focused on the college and institutes to support students who are coming to the college on income assistance to do upgrading. And it's important to note that these students didn't get income assistance throughout their entire education. Once they finished that upgrading, they say they got their grade 12 and they entered into a skills training program, they had to go, they had to find, get a student loan and get off welfare. But what was unique about this was that these group of students could be in the college setting getting some supports of a whole variety, be it regular sort of counseling to assist them with their difficulties, as well as some special support kinds of programs in addition to the actual upgrading programs. So what was good about this is that these there were offices and programs set up that really understood the struggles people living in poverty face, because there's a lot of what I'd call middle-class bias that exists in our post-secondary institutions, that people just are unaware of the profound effect that poverty has. And so these programs and services really recognized that and supported students to be successful. I think there's sometimes a perception put out there that people on poverty are not interested in learning or getting a job, and clearly that's proven to be false. The students that these people worked with, time and time again, the people I talked to, spoke about their phenomenal courage and tenacity against all odds to actually go back to school. And then once they were in the college system, I mean, this was a transformative experience for some of these students who had never thought that they would never be able to do that. They could start to imagine and gain access to some other skills-based training.
And then how did the welfare rule changes then interact with the cuts to these programs that, from what you're saying, sounds like they were very successful? What happened then when the welfare rule changes came about?
Well, there was a lot of changes in the welfare regulations. Brand new legislation was put into place, and the rates were cut. There were also dramatic changes to the rules around who could be designated as disabled. And another important rule was that people on income assistance couldn't go and get upgrading and continue to receive support. So basically it was those considered employable had to get a job. And the only support and training that was then left was some very short-term, what was called training for jobs, that helped them with their resume writing and their job search. But there was none of the available education under those changes is really about upgrading or skills training. So quite dramatic changes there. So there were some students in these what were called institutional-based training programs in the colleges, and some of them had 2 months left on their program, and when the changes came about, they had to either, they were in danger, if they didn't quit, they would have lost their income assistance benefits. So the changes were quite dramatic. So it really, that's what we call the report, a pathway out of poverty. It was basically blocked for all kinds of students. And what we've learned now, too, is with the changes in eligibility criteria, there's a large number of people, the welfare rolls, did drop, but we really don't know what happened to those people. It's not necessarily the case that they are actually working; they're just no longer eligible. And there's a link to the increase in homelessness as well. So those changes in 2002 were really phenomenal.
And then the Liberals brought in alternative programs that were more focused on job search and placement. Were those programs effective?
Well, they did a big evaluation study. It's actually on the government's website, looking at the effectiveness of those training for jobs and job placement. And what they found was because these programs were based on very specific performance measures, so that the programs would only get funding once the students had been successful, that is, at been able to find work. So, and they were very short-term. We're talking sometimes 12 to 16 weeks. And so what happened was the people providing those training, they would not surprisingly select students who are those on income assistance who really had they were ready to work with just some support. So it's often called sort of a creaming process, where those who really don't need too much help are the ones that access those programs, because they're, because of the limited resources available, you know, they're more likely to find work. And the ones that were left behind, so a lot of money was spent on those in that category, and there was questions raised about whether that was a good use of the funds, whether indeed without all of that expenditure these people would have liked to have been able to find work. And we're not talking about high-wage jobs either. These are low-wage jobs. So what was discovered was those with multiple barriers to employment wouldn't get into these programs, because the programs knew that they couldn't serve them, and then they wouldn't get funded, because they were performance-based. It was a performance-based funding setup. And so it's pretty obvious that there's been some pretty serious questions raised about the whole funding structure of those programs and who ended up being served. So those most in need really were not well served by those programs.
And what recommendations do you make then in the report?
Well, I think we would like to have income assistance recipients supported while they upgrade their education. So we return to that policy so they can participate in post-secondary education and complete those upgrading credentials, so they then can get into some other skills-based training. We want to have the funding that was designated for colleges and institutes restored, the funding that was just to support income assistance recipients. We also want the colleges, learning from this study that I did, to continue to provide programs and services that offer holistic support for these students based on the best practices that came out of the study. And also the other thing, too, that's very important is to restore tuition-free adult basic education in the colleges and institutes. With the funding changes that have happened, some of the colleges are now charging tuition, and that's a real step backwards, I think. So those are our four main recommendations.
Thank you very much, Shauna, for talking with us this morning.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Shauna Butterwick. Shauna is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Studies at UBC, specializing in adult education. A link to the report can be found on Red Eye's website, which is coopradio.org/redeye. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.